this inability to understand people, because the alternative was that he'd been conditioned to think no one would ever suggest something like this to him, and he simply couldn't process it when someone did. And that was too sad to believe.
You mean...
His eyebrows creased. Yes. His breath hitched.
Are you sure?
I let my fingers wander to the waistband of his jeans. Yes. Chapter 34. We didn't talk on the way to my house. Miles's knuckles were white against the steering wheel, and he kept glancing over at me every few seconds. I knew this because I kept glancing over at him, too. Something wiggling and strange tunneled through my stomach, half excitement, half terror. When he pulled up to the driveway and reached over to unbuckle his seatbelt, I held him back. Wait, let me go in first. Drive down the street some, then walk back. You know which window is my room?
No.
I showed him. Come to the window, I'll let you in. I marched up to the front door, perimeter checking the yard as I went, trying to be as casual as possible when I stepped into the house and flipped the bolt behind me. I kicked my shoes off in the hallway and tiptoed past the family room. Alex? My mother. Hey, Mom. I'm glad you're home. She stood from the couch and held out her hand. I didn't realize you'd be out so late. You need to take this. She gave me a pill. I swallowed it dry. We stopped for dinner. Did you have fun? Yeah. I guess. I wanted to be in my bedroom. Wanted to be shut in, safe, away from prying eyes. With Miles. How was Miles?
Good?
I don't know what you mean. He was visiting his mother in a mental hospital. You'd think he'd have some sort of issues. Heaven knows the boy already seems a little... emotionally stunted. I'm half convinced he's autistic. So what if he is? She blinked at me.
What?
So what if Miles is autistic? And he's not emotionally stunted. He has emotions like the rest of us. He just has trouble figuring out what they are sometimes. Alex, he seems very smart, but I don't think he's the best influence. I scoffed. If only she knew. Then why'd you get so excited about the idea of me going with him? Because you wanted me to see where I'd be living after high school? No, of course not. I didn't mean it like that. I shrugged my jacket off and hung it on the coat rack. I'm going to bed. Please don't bother me. I left her standing in the dark entryway and slipped back to my room, closing and locking the door behind me. I didn't bother with a perimeter check. I didn't care. Joseph Stalin himself could have been standing in the corner, and I wouldn't have cared. I lifted the window and popped out the screen. Be quiet, I said. Miles had no trouble with that. He slinked into the room, blending into the darkness. I found him by touch and brought him close, helping him slide out of his jacket. The smell of pastries and mint soap filled my room. With him here, I knew everything really was okay. I wrapped my arms around him and pressed my face into his shirt. We tottered back through the narrow shaft of yellow light from the street lamp outside and fell onto the bed. The artifacts on the shelves rattled, and my pictures fluttered. I sat up and pressed a finger to my lips. He nodded. The streetlight hit his eyes and turned them into blue-stained glass. He had to be real. Out of everything, he had to be real. I slipped his glasses off and set them on the nightstand. It struck me how open his face was, all clear blue eyes and sandy hair and golden freckles. My heart stuttered, but he hadn't done anything. I wondered for a second if maybe I was the one who'd been conditioned to think this couldn't happen. He laid there, staring up at me. And while I was sure he couldn't see much, it still felt like he was analyzing the tiniest details. My fingers fanned out over his abdomen. His muscles clenched, and he released a breathless laugh. Ticklish. I smiled, but he'd closed his eyes. I eased the shirt up over his chest, and he sat up to let me pull it off. The feel of his skin under my fingers sent little jolts of fire up my arms, and when he carefully peeled my shirt off, I thought I would combust. I hated things like swimming and changing in locker rooms because I hated being so bare in front of other people. I was too exposed. It made me think of torture. But this wasn't torture at all. Miles paused, wrapped around me, his neck craned over my shoulder. I felt a small tug on my bra, and I realized he was examining the clasp. I stifled my laugh in his shoulder. He'd gotten it unhooked, and was rehooking it. He unhooked and rehooked it a few more times. "Stop stalling," I whispered. He unhooked it one last time and let me pull it off. The rest of our clothes joined the shirts on the floor. I shivered and pressed myself closer to him, letting the heat build between our stomachs again, hiding my face in the crook of his neck. I rolled us to the side and he curled around me. I pulled the blanket up over us to create a little cocoon. I loved being this close to him. I loved being able to touch so much of him. I loved how tightly he held me, the soft in-out of his breathing, and how I didn't feel the need to look over my shoulder when he was here. I loved being able to pretend that I was a normal teenager, sneaking around, and everything and everyone was just all right. Miles's fingers pressed into the small of my back.
"Vasorexia," he mumbled.
"Gesundheit," he laughed.
"It's an overwhelming desire to kiss."
"I thought you weren't good at figuring out what you felt."
"I'm probably using the word in the wrong context, but I'm pretty sure that's what this is."
I pressed a kiss to his shoulder. One of his thumbs brushed across my spine, and it was too much. Too much too fast. "Don't hate me," I said. "But I don't think I want to do this. Not right now. Not here. I'm sorry. I didn't think I would change my mind." He let out a whispery, relieved laugh.
"That's actually good. I think I'm going to have a heart attack just from this. Anything more might kill me."
I wedged a hand between us. His heart beat fast and hard against my palm. I whipped it back. "Jesus, you're right. I think you might actually have a heart attack." I was mostly joking, but he pulled back, bashful. His breathing came a little harder.
"It would help if we could reposition."
We shifted away from each other. His breathing returned to normal. We faced each other in the dark, the covers pulled up over us. His hand found mine.
"Sorry," he said. "I'm not used to people touching me."
"Neither am I." There was silence for a few long minutes, until I had an idea. "Pick someone," I said.
"What?"
I smiled. "Pick someone." He hesitated, then smiled back.
"Okay, go."
"Are you dead?"
"No."
"Are you a man?"
"No."
"Do you live in a foreign country?"
"No."
"Female alive from the U.S.
Maybe he hadn't gone for obscure.
"Do you have anything to do with East Shoal?" I asked.
"Yes."
"Shot in the dark. Are you in the club?" He paused.
"Yes."
"You're Jetta." He shook his head. I frowned. "Theo?"
"No."
"Well, if you're not either of them, you'd have to be me." He blinked.
"It's me?" I said. "I couldn't think of anyone else," he said.
He inched closer and opened his arms. I crawled in and rested my head on his shoulder. He whispered something in German. I closed my eyes and placed my hand over his heart again. Part 3. Rubber Bands. Chapter 35. Miles fell out of bed at 1:30 in the morning, panic flooding his face.
I have to go.
He stumbled his way into his clothes. I sat up, shook off drowsiness, and pulled the comforter up to cover my chest.
What's wrong?
I whispered back.
Shoes. Where are my shoes?
Next to the window. He grabbed them and shoved them on his feet.
My dad knows I never work past midnight.
What does he do if you're not there when you're supposed to be? Miles stopped and looked at me. Then he found his jacket on the floor and slung it over his shoulders.
Come here.
I opened my arms. He perched on the edge of the bed, body rigid. I turned his face toward me and kissed him.
Can you be here Monday morning?
Sure. I kissed him again and handed him his glasses.
Here.
Chapter 36. I couldn't stop smiling at Finnegan's the next day. The customers definitely left me bigger tips, but that could have been because I wasn't staring at them like they were bugged. Tucker noticed.
Why are you so happy?
He grumbled, shoving bills into the register. The register shook when he slammed the drawer closed. Am I not allowed to be happy? I asked. Still, I wiped my smile away. Guilt knotted my stomach. I wanted to tell him what I'd learned from June, but this was the most he'd spoken to me in days. I grabbed Finnegan's 8-ball.
Did I do something wrong?
My sources say no. Tucker glanced sideways at me.
You're acting like you won the lottery. Just tell me it doesn't have anything to do with Richter.
Fine. I won't. I'd apologized a million and one times. I'd taken shifts for him at work, done my own discussion papers during English class, and hadn't asked him for a damn thing. I didn't care if he was mad at me. He had no right to comment on what I did with Miles. He turned to face me.
You're kidding. You're still hanging out with him after he did that to me? After everything he's done?
It's none of your business what I do with him, Tucker. I lowered my voice so the couple sitting at the closest table wouldn't overhear. Tucker hesitated.
What you do? What are you doing with him?
My entire face must have been as red as my hair. I said it's none of your business, didn't I? Tucker's voice dropped until he was whispering.
You are shitting me.
You slept with him? I pretended to check the cash register. We're together, okay? That's all you need to know. He grabbed my arm and pulled me toward the kitchen.
You have no idea what he's going to do to you. He's not a normal person, Alex. He doesn't understand how what he does affects other people.
For a moment, all I could do was stare at him. I'd had a snappy comment ready, but he hadn't said what I expected. He hadn't said, he's a dick, or he's evil incarnate. Tucker had been through this before. Not exactly the same circumstances, but Miles had hurt him a long time before I'd met either of them.
I'll be fine, Tucker.
I pulled my arm from his grip.
I'll be okay.
Tucker shook his head, his gaze dropping to the floor. He shouldered his way past me, muttering something I almost didn't catch.
I hope so.
I'll be okay, won't I?
Without a doubt. Chapter 37. Dad didn't seem to feel too bad about losing driving duties on Monday. He actually gave me a sly grin as I walked out the door. I didn't know what I expected. Maybe for Miles to look happier than he did? Maybe for him to give me a reason to disbelieve what Tucker had said? It had only been a day since I'd last seen him, and I hadn't tried to quell the riot of excitement in my stomach. But as I climbed into the passenger seat, he only gave me the weakest smile before he dissolved into a sort of humiliated depression. He had dark bags under his eyes, like he hadn't slept.
What's wrong? I asked. What did he do?
Nothing.
He stared straight ahead as he drove.
I didn't say anything else until we'd parked and were walking toward the building, and I noticed that he was doing his best to conceal a limp.
Why are you limping? What happened?
Nothing. Nothing happened. I'm fine.
Miles, what did he do to you?
Don't worry about it, he snapped. I shrank back. We didn't talk all the way to first period English, and when we sat down in our seats, a few snickers came from Cliff's corner of the room.
Hey, Richter,
Cliff called.
Those allies finally kick your ass?
Miles gave Cliff the finger and laid his head down on the desk. I stared at his back and his sandy hair, and my heart sank until it rested somewhere below my navel. Maybe I'd gotten my hopes up too much. Maybe Tucker had been right. Maybe that trip had been a one-time thing. Maybe he didn't... Stop thinking about him, idiot. I looked at the flickering fluorescent light over my head, then at my classmates, fresh from winter break. Celia's hair had turned a strange, moldy mixture of yellow and brown, but it was still green at the tips. She wore East Shoal sweats, and her blue contacts were gone. Her eyes were brown. Her face looked weird, until I realized it was because she wasn't wearing makeup. Even though she had no makeup on and she was acne-ridden, she was pretty. Why did she try so hard? Everyone was talking about her, making jokes and snide comments loud enough for her to hear. She just sat there, staring at the top of her desk, her eyebrows pushed together. She didn't seem to want to kill me, or anyone. She didn't seem to have much fighting spirit left at all. A tiny part of me, the part that forgot it had witnessed her screaming about her burning hair, and screaming about not getting what she wanted, and screaming about her friends, felt bad for her. Miles slept through all our classes that day. Even if he didn't usually make an effort, he never just slept. The teachers must have realized something was wrong because they didn't try to wake him up. 5 minutes before each bell, he'd rise like the dead and shuffle on to the next class. Someone called him Nazi in the hallway after fifth period, and he just kept on walking. I didn't like seeing him this upset. So when we left chemistry and headed for the gym, I shifted my books over to one arm and took his hand, threading our fingers together. I stood on my toes and kissed the corner of his mouth. For a few seconds, a real smile lit up his face. It was gone by the time we got to the gym, though he still held tight to my hand. The club sat in a group on the bleachers, and a few feet away from them sat Celia. We'd all known this was going to happen, but no one seemed particularly happy about it.
Hey, boss. Alex,
said Evan.
Got something you want to tell us?
Ian asked, pointing to our hands. Miles looked down as if he'd forgotten he was holding my hand, then looked back up at Evan and Ian and their impish grins and said quite plainly,
No.
I shook my head, let go of Miles' hand, and went to sit next to Jetta.
As you probably all guessed, Hendrix is doing community service with us now.
Miles waved a lazy hand in Celia's direction. She shot him a look, but it was gone in an instant.
Can't you do anything, boss? Asked Theo. Can't you get her sent someplace else?
I don't like it, Miles snapped. But I'm not a miracle worker. McCoy's own damn rules got her put here, and trust me, he isn't happy about it either. It's one semester, just deal with her. Evan and Ian, I'm leaving her under your control. Make sure she's doing something. Everyone else, normal stations.
Evan and Ian looked at Celia with twin expressions of glee on their faces, and then dragged her along to the storage rooms to get the ball carts. Jetta left to watch over Art's wrestling practice in the auxiliary gym, and Theo retreated to the concession stand. I started to follow her, but Miles grabbed my sleeve and gently tugged me back.
You're with me.
He motioned toward the scorer's table. We sat down and got stat charts and rosters ready until the basketball teams came in and warmed up.
I watched Celia the whole time as Evan made her sweep the gym floor by herself, and Ian made her put new bags in all the trash cans. When she was done, she sat down in the bleachers. Seconds later, her mother breezed in through the doors, blonde hair swinging against her back. Celia didn't even look up when her mother stopped in front of her and began hissing.
"What are you doing now? Wallowing?"
Celia stared at her feet and said nothing. Her mother continued, casting a shadow over her.
"You could have had everything, Celia. If you had once done as I said, you could have had your pick of any college. Anyone you wanted. You could have had everything. But now you're off the cheerleading squad, forced to spend time with these delinquents."
"I'm sorry about earlier," Miles said. "I'm not used to dealing with... not used to having someone to..."
"And instead of trying to get back on top, I find you mooning over that boy."
"So, yeah, it was him. Were you worried? I didn't mean to..."
"I can tell you right now, Richard will have a thing or two to say about that. He's not going to let my daughter keep herself from her full potential."
"Don't have to worry about it, okay? Everything's fine.
Richard's going to put everything back in order. He'll make sure you're worthy of carrying on my legacy. And if that boy stands in his way, Richard will have him removed."
Miles pulled on my hand, jerking my focus completely to him.
"You're shaking. Why are you shaking?"
"I'm just nervous. And I feel bad for Celia. Her mother seems terrible. And McCoy. I want to tell someone, but I don't know who would listen."
"Maybe McCoy will slip, and we'll have evidence that something is going on."
Celia stood on the bleachers across the gym, staring back at us. Her mother had gone. When she saw me looking at her, she bolted down the stairs too fast and tripped the last three steps.
"You're an obstacle," I said.
"What?"
"Celia likes you."
"So I've been told."
"And McCoy and her mom think it's a bad thing. They think you're impeding her potential or something. And they really don't like it."
He hesitated. Doubt pressed his eyebrows together. Even Miles had a limit to his suspension of disbelief, and I'd been paranoid long enough to know I was pushing it.
"I know how it sounds," I said, "but I heard it straight from them. And I'm really afraid McCoy is going to hurt you. I'm not going to do anything stupid or weird or... Just please tell me you'll stay away from him."
He lifted my hand and held it against his chest.
"I told you I'd be careful, didn't I?"
"Yeah." Celia wiped her eyes and shuffled toward the door.
"What's she doing?"
Miles rose from his seat. I pulled him back down again.
"Let her go," I said. "She'll be back."
Sure enough, about 10 minutes later, Celia wandered back into the gym, her eyes redder and puffier than when she'd left. She sat down on the very end of the bottom row of bleachers and stared at her hands. She looked broken, like the crazy bitch in her had finally died and left a shell behind. June was right. I needed to talk to her. Chapter 38. She tried to go down one of the back hallways after the game. I didn't figure it'd be hard to stop her. 2 words and she'd turn and pounce on me. But when I threw open the doors and called out her name, she looked over her shoulder, eyes wide, like she was afraid I was the one who was going to kill her. And then she ran. I chased her. I guess being a cheerleader had its perks. She was in better shape than me. But I knew where she was going. When we hit an intersection, Celia turned right and I kept going straight. I came out on the west side of the school, jumped down the handicap entrance ramp, and made it to the northwest corner in time to catch Celia in the stomach with my arm. My momentum slammed her into the wall.
"Stop running,"
I said, panting. She glared at me, rubbing the shoulder that had hit the brick.
"I have to... ask you something.
So ask me," she snarled. I took a deep breath.
McCoy. What's going on? With McCoy?
Celia's eyes widened, then narrowed.
What are you talking about?
Look, I know about your mom. And I know about McCoy. I know he calls you down to his office all the time, and he's obsessed. If he's doing something, you should tell someone about it. For half a second, real recognition flashed across Celia's face. But then her expression twisted, and she bared her teeth.
You don't know anything about me.
She pushed me back. Get out of my face, and don't mention Rich Dick McCoy or my mom to me again. She shoulder-checked me hard enough to make me stumble backward and almost lose my footing. I thought about following her again, questioning her until she admitted that something was going on, that she needed help. But I already knew. I'd taken something she loved. She would never trust me.
She's not crazy at all, is she?
My sources say no. She's just alone.
Most likely.
But she never wants anyone around.
Reply hazy. Try again.
She doesn't want help. Why doesn't she want help?
Cannot predict now.
Chapter 39. The running theme of January seemed to be to make Celia's time a living hell. Evan and Ian forced her to pick up trash they'd knocked over. Theo had her clean the popcorn and hot dog machines for an entire week. Jetta made her jump into the pool in her clothes to get dive bricks that Jetta herself had thrown in when the swimming team was standing less than 10 feet away. Celia never did anything to stop this. In fact, the only times she did get angry enough to put her foot down were the times I mentioned McCoy to her. By mid-February, I began wondering what the club could possibly have against Celia that justified the things they did to her. Yes, she was a bitch. Yes, she'd done horrible things to people. Or so I'd been told. Miles and I didn't join in, but we didn't stop it either. And that made me feel like we had. Whenever Celia saw us, whenever I'd catch her watching us after a quick kiss in the gym or holding hands in the hallway, I could swear she was about to burst into tears.
They can do what they want to her, Miles said one day at the end of February, after the triplets had made Celia carry all the fishy-smelling towels to the laundry without a cart.
She accidentally dropped some into the pool and had to get into the water to get them. Miles and I stood with our backs against the tiles. Miles was staring at the water with his nose turned up. As Celia climbed back out of the pool, she looked at us, at Miles.
"Put those in the laundry room," Miles called to her.
Celia nodded. Miles was the only person she'd take orders from without cursing under her breath or glaring.
"Hey, Green Queen."
Evan, Ian, and Jetta came out of the locker rooms in bathing suits.
"What are you doing?" Miles asked, glancing at his watch. "It's 6, which means there's plenty of time to swim before we have to close."
Ian climbed the diving board.
"Mein Chef, Alex, you should come swimming with us," said Jetta, floating over to the side of the pool and looking up at us.
"Yeah, boss, come on,"
Ian cried before diving.
"No," said Miles. "I hate getting wet."
"That's what she said," Evan began before being dunked by his brother.
"You know I don't like swimming," said Miles when Jetta wouldn't stop giving him a very hurt puppy dog look.
"Then we should play your game." "I have someone."
Miles fought a smile for a few seconds, but lost in the end. They started a game of 20 questions in German. I didn't know what they were saying, but I was pretty sure Miles was dragging the game out on purpose. When it was just him and Jetta, he could find any excuse not to speak English. I was glad he had Jetta to talk to, but I was missing out. There was a whole other person inside him I couldn't see because I didn't speak his language. When the game was over, Miles made it to 15 questions before guessing correctly. Jetta lifted her arms toward him and wiggled her fingers.
"I'm not getting in," he said one last time.
and Jetta admitted defeat and swam away. "Don't tell me you can't swim," I said. Miles scoffed. "Of course I can swim. If I couldn't swim, I'd be dead by now," he said. Then softer. "My dad used to take me fishing with him when I was little. You know, most sons fish with their dads. That's a nice family bonding experience, right? Well, add the attention span of a flea with ADHD, a bit of booze, and a large body of water, and you end up with a dad who thinks it's fun to throw his kid off the boat and watch him swim for shore."
"Like he did to your mom?"
He nodded. "He got me first."
"That's awful," I whispered. "You could have drowned. Or gotten really sick. There's all sorts of bacteria in lakes. Or
gotten pulled under by something I couldn't see," Miles offered quietly. "Yeah, that was the best part. He knew I was scared of the things in those lakes. Bastard.
The smell of algae and pond scum."
"That was the day before my mom and I went to Germany," he went on. "She realized that Cleveland had done something and came looking for me. We stayed in the car that night, and the next day she decided we were leaving. We only went back to the house for a minute for our passports. Then straight to Meijer so she could grab stuff she thought we'd need. And finally to the airport."
I hugged him, something I'd been doing a lot lately. Sometimes because I could. Most of the time because he seemed like he needed it. So far, no one had tried to do anything to Miles. I'd hardly seen McCoy at all since the new semester started, and Celia didn't seem to have it in her to hurt anyone. Whenever I caught her staring, I only had to look at her to get her to go away again. But she was always hovering, like a ghost waiting for someone to join her on the other side. Miles had been taking fewer and fewer of his mafia hitman jobs, and it was clear that he didn't have enough occupying his mind. He frequently paced the length of the gym, wrote so often in his notebook that he had to get a new one, and would occasionally start his sentences in the middle of a thought. His limp went away, but he wore his sleeves rolled down and came to school one day with a black eye. His mood infected the club like a disease. Nothing ran smoothly anymore. And soon his gloom infested the whole school. Mr. Gunthrie went on an hour-long rant about the flickering light over my desk, throwing away an entire class period. Ms. Dalton couldn't find any of her notes and even forgot her Diet Coke. Students who normally paid Miles for his services began taking matters into their own hands, and detention was full for the first time all year. I wondered if the gloom was affecting me, too, but I got the feeling it had more to do with the thin envelopes I kept getting from colleges and scholarship foundations. Most of them started with, "We regret to inform you." I tried not to take it personally. How many mentally ill lower-class high school girls could there be in Indiana? Probably more than I thought. But handing each one over to my mother was like running the gauntlet of passive-aggressive pep talks. "Are you sure you signed up right? Maybe you just forgot something. Should I have Leanne explain things to them?"
Needless to say, I didn't enjoy spending time at home. But school wasn't much better. In March, I began to notice people pointing at me as I walked by in the hallway, ignoring me when I tried to talk to them, and blatantly not believing things I said. I wouldn't have cared so much if it hadn't been exactly what had happened at Hill Park after they'd found out. At the end of March, the entire club was assembled in the main gym for the band competition. The bleachers were full with spectators, along with the bands from other schools. McCoy employed half the students in seventh-period gym to string up golden ribbons around the scoreboard and create a tribute table where people could sign a petition to finally get the scoreboard plated in gold and pick up a complimentary tiny scoreboard magnet. Obviously, it was a smashing success. From what I saw, most people thought this was a joke. Honoring the scoreboard like this was a quirky little thing we East Shoalers did to cover up the fact that it had killed someone.
I never got wind of anyone accusing McCoy of losing his marbles. When the competition started, we were kicked out of the scorer's table by the guy announcing the bands. We stood next to the main doors with our backs pressed to the wall. I stuck close to Miles, because there I didn't feel the need to check every instrument for contraband items and communist propaganda. If something strange was actually going on, Miles would tell me. One band finished their set, and another came in to take its place. The announcer left his post, complaining about never getting restroom breaks. In the relative quiet, I began to nod off against Miles's shoulder.
"Excuse me, everyone?"
Celia's voice filled the gym. I jerked awake. The room went silent.
"Hi,"
she waved from the scorer's table.
"I just wanted to take a moment to remind everyone that all proceeds from today's concession sales are going to benefit the American Schizophrenia Association."
"You're the obstacle, idiot," the little voice roared. "Alex," Miles said urgently, pulling me toward the door. "Alex, you have to get out of here." But I was rooted to the spot, my brain frozen.
"All of this is in honor of our own paranoid schizophrenic Alexandra Ridgemont, who transferred to our school after graffitiing the Hill Park School Gymnasium."
Celia turned and looked at me, along with everyone else. She waved, smiling.
"Hi, Alex."
Her last words were lost in the empty air of the gym. Miles had shot across the bottom of the bleachers and ripped her microphone's power cord from its extension. He charged up to the scorer's table and took the microphone itself away from her. But the damage was done. I was in a tank full of sharks. Eyes bore down on me from all sides. The band members stopped moving their instruments. A few people on the other side of the bleachers stood up for a better look. Theo had come in from the concession stand, and now hovered by the far doors with Evan and Ian, their faces pale. My hand fumbled for the door. The push bar slipped under my fingers once, twice. Finally, I was able to push it open, and I sprinted for the nearest restroom. I locked myself in a stall, threw up, and curled into a ball on the tile, and squeezed my eyes shut. I tugged on my hair, wishing it wasn't so damned red, wishing my mind would work the way it should. Wishing things would go back to the way they were when I was 7, when everything was real, and I didn't know any better. When I finally calmed down enough to open my eyes, I was still sitting on the floor in a bathroom stall in a public high school. I was still crazy, and my hair still looked like I dunked my head in a tank of ketchup. Miles must have been keeping people out of the bathroom because no one came. And every so often he would pound on the door and call my name and say that he hadn't told anyone. I wanted to tell him that I believed him, that Celia could have found out other ways. But I couldn't get myself to move, and I couldn't open my mouth.
"Lexi?"
I pushed to my feet, wiping away whatever tears were left, and cracked open the bathroom door. Dad stood there, smelling like freshly dug dirt and wild herbs. Behind him, the hallway was empty. Miles had gone. Dad didn't say anything, just pulled me into a hug and walked me out to the car. Chapter 40. My dad was better at calming me down than I ever gave him credit for. I think some of it was the way he smelled. The other part was his choice in movies.
"Dad, you could be Indiana Jones."
"You think so?" he replied. "I'd have to grow a bit more scruff than I have now."
He rubbed his unshaven face.
"Ooh, I could go as Indiana Jones for Halloween next year. Think your mom would agree to dress up as my spunky yet sexy female companion?" "I don't know. You'd have to look really good, and probably bribe her with chocolate."
He laughed, and the doorbell rang. He went to answer it while I settled into the couch with the bowl of popcorn. Charlie had avoided the living room since we'd returned, and my mother, thank God, had been at the grocery store when Miles had called my house. I tried to ignore what was going on in the hallway. Dad would scare away anyone unless it was Miles. But I had a feeling Miles was going to give me some space.
I wanted to check on Alex and make sure she was okay. I heard about what happened at school.
Tucker.
Yes, she's fine,
Dad replied. He peeked into the living room.
Hey, Lex Luthor, you feel up to guests?
I pushed myself off the couch and peered around the doorframe into the hallway. Tucker stood on the front step, worry on his face. His hand brushed nervously through the huge pot of fresh white geraniums my mother had set on the porch. Behind him, the trees along the street were in full bloom, bursting with the colors of spring.
Oh, hey, Alex. Are you okay?
Dad, it's fine. I'll talk to him outside. I set the popcorn bowl down and moved past my dad to join Tucker on the porch. It's okay, really, I said one last time, and with a reluctant smile, Dad closed the door.
So, you're okay?
Tucker said quickly.
Are you coming back to school?
No, I'm really not okay, I said. But yeah, I am coming back. We only have 2 months left, after all. And if I don't go back, things are only going to get worse. High school dropout. That was exactly what colleges wanted to see on applications. Tucker stood there for a moment, running his hands through his black hair, fixing his glasses, spinning his watch around his wrist.
How'd you find out? I asked. Text message?
He held up his phone.
I think most everyone in the school got one.
I nodded. I had figured that pretty much everyone knew by now. That's why they'd been ignoring me and whispering behind my back the past few days. Celia had been leaking the information for at least a week now. The band competition was just a way to scare me.
So, now you know, I said. I'm sorry.
For what? It's not your fault I'm crazy.
No, I don't care about that. My dad has schizophrenic patients. He calls them normal people with more quirks. I'm sorry that I got so mad at you and ignored you for so long. And I'm sorry I didn't trust that you could handle Miles. I shouldn't have butted in.
But you were right. I shouldn't have done that to you or to anyone. I should have stopped him. Tucker laughed hesitantly.
Well, I kind of deserved it.
I waited. Tucker sighed and sat down on the porch swing.
You got that job from Cliff. I'd been waiting for it all semester. Do you remember Celia's bonfire on scoreboard day?
Yeah. My stomach sank. I knew where this was going. He blushed and looked away.
I slept with Rhea.
Before I knew what I was doing, I had his face in my hands and was yelling, Tucker, that is not true. You are the one source of good in this godforsaken place. You can't have gone along with Rhea's plans. I'm the one who screwed up and put Icy Hot in your underwear. Tucker shook his head, and I dropped my hands.
No, you're not a bad person, he said. And Richter isn't a bad person. And I'm not a bad person. We're just people, and people sometimes do stupid things.
I stared at him. After a few seconds, I said,
So, you and Rhea. Me and Rhea, he replied. You had sex with Rhea Wolf. I had sex with Rhea Wolf, he admitted, raising his hands in defeat.
And how was that?
It sucked, he said, laughing suddenly. It was awful. I've never felt more awkward in my life. I mean, it was pretty obvious from the beginning that she was using me, but you've seen her. She's hot, like, beyond hot, like, hotness to the nth power.
Tucker, I get it.
You'd think hotness would make it better, you know? But it's kind of hard to enjoy yourself when the other person keeps hitting you and telling you how terrible you are at it and what you're doing wrong.
That would suck, I laughed, only because he did.
Why'd you do it? I mean, it couldn't have been because she was hot.
Tucker turned a little red again.
Honestly, Richter and I sort of had a war going over her during middle school.
Over Rhea?
I laughed again.
Yeah, that's why he hates her,
Tucker said.
I mean, we both knew it was pointless, but he never understood why she'd pick Brawn over Brains. She came up to me at Celia's bonfire and started flirting with me.
So it was Tucker with Rhea in that bedroom, and I had almost walked in on them.
Peachy. And then it sort of happened. I knew she was just doing it to make Cliff mad. Everyone knows that. She does it every year. And I knew I'd have to deal with him afterward. That's why Richter had you guys break into my house and do all that stuff to me, because Cliff paid him. So really, it was my fault in the first place.
Tucker, shut up.
Okay.
We lapsed into silence, staring across the street at my neighbor's bright green lawn. After a few minutes, Tucker said,
"So you still think something is up with McCoy?"
"Yeah," I said. "I never told you. I got to talk to Miles's mom." I explained everything I'd learned from June. Then I told him about confronting Celia outside the gym, and about Miles being an obstacle. "I think McCoy's going to do something, but I don't know when or how. And I'm afraid that if I don't figure it out, something bad will happen."
"And you're positive," he said slowly, "that this is all actually happening?"
I rolled my eyes. "I'm never positive of anything, Tucker. I'm just telling you what I know. But you said earlier this year that Celia and her mom didn't get along, right?"
I've seen them come into school a few times before, and I've heard things, but it's not like I'm in with their family.
Well, look, even if I am making up parts of it, I know that something is going on. I know McCoy is messed up, and I know he's taking Celia along for the ride. And I feel like if I don't do something about it, then no one will. Tucker was quiet for a moment. Then, finally, he said,
"I don't know if I should tell you this, but I know where McCoy lives. You won't find anything incriminating in his office or at school. If there is anything, you'll find it where he lives."
"Mr. Soggy Potato Salad," I said, putting my hand over my heart, Are you suggesting we break into someone's house?" Tucker shrugged.
"Not to take anything, just to look around."
"Should I ask Miles to come with us? He has more experience breaking and entering than we do.
He knows about all of this?"
"If McCoy is really after him, I figured he could keep himself safer than I could alone," I said. "Besides, he's known about me since October."
"Oh, well."
Tucker thought for a moment.
"Yeah. I guess we'd be stupid not to ask him. His house is only a few streets away from McCoy's."
"What?"
"Yeah. McCoy lives in Lakeview Trail."
Chapter 41. Dad took me to school the next day. In the hallways, everyone stared at me like I'd imagined them doing all year. My hair had become a blight, just like at Hill Park. People saw me coming and jumped from my path. I tried to perform my perimeter checks like usual, but by the time I'd left my locker, there were so many eyes watching me it became difficult to keep my panic down. The only good place was English, where Mr. Gunthrie seemed to have reined in the class so well they ignored me completely. Miles ignored me, too. He sat with his head bowed, scribbling furiously in his notebook. The lines he made were thick and dark, and covered whole pages. In true Miles the Jerk fashion, he didn't talk to me until I forced him to, when we were walking together toward the gym. It was the day of the one baseball game I'd been dreading all year, East Shoal versus Hill Park, and part of the reason I decided to come back to school. The other part was a joint threat between my mother and the gravedigger to burn me in the fires of hell if I stayed home. I told Dad that. He said I might be exaggerating. I had to face this. But before I could even think about it, I had to make sure Miles was okay. I checked to make sure no one was around, then asked Miles, "What's going on?" He ran a shaky hand through his hair, his eyes flicking back and forth over the empty rotunda.
Sorry, I couldn't think at all today. Everyone knows. They've been talking about it all day, and I can't figure out how they know.
They knew about his mom. I grabbed his hand and pulled it away from his hair, holding it between both of mine. What's the worst they can do, right? We only have a couple months left.
It's that they know, he said. I don't like them knowing things about my mom because they're going to start making judgments. And will anyone even take me seriously anymore? What are they going to ask me to do now? Even if it's ridiculous, I'll have to do it. I can't say no, because then I go from diehard genius back to punching bag nerd. And no one will be safe anymore. I won't be safe anymore.
I looked around again. Just him saying he didn't feel safe made me think McCoy was hiding around a corner with a lighter and a can of hairspray. Finally, he said,
"My mom called me last night at Finnegan's."
"How come?"
"My dad. He went up to see her. She told me not to visit anymore."
Miles. I wasn't good at comforting people. So I did what I'd done before and dragged him into my plans. "I think Celia told everyone," I said, "like she told them about me. And I think McCoy was the one who told her." Miles's expression flattened out the way it always did when he was dealing with information rather than emotions. To anyone else, he probably looked bored or annoyed. To me, he looked relaxed. The content cat.
"That makes sense. He would have access to the records. It would have been harder for him to find out about my mother, but..."
I rubbed my head. "I honestly didn't think Celia would hurt you. I thought she still liked you too much."
"I guess she's had enough."
"Tucker and I think we can figure out what McCoy's master plan is. But we need your help."
"With what?"
"We're going to break into his house." Miles brought out the magnificent quirked eyebrow, which made me feel better. That expression meant that things were at least kind of okay.
"Are you sure that's what you want to do?"
"Tucker said if we're going to find anything incriminating, it won't be at school. And he's right. It'll be at McCoy's." "Well, I'm sure I could just John McClane my way into his house by shooting down the front door. I figured you might be able to do the job a little more discreetly."
"So, basically you're saying if I don't agree, you're going to go anyway. But you're pretty sure you'll get caught."
"Basically."
"But you know I don't want you to get caught."
"Yes."
"So you're blackmailing me."
"Yep." He narrowed his eyes.
"I can get behind that," he said. "When?"
"I don't know. Are you sure you won't mind it if Tucker's there? Can you two play nice?"
"Maybe."
"Would it help if I told you this was Tucker's idea?" Now both eyebrows were up.
"Well, fuck me."
"I'll take that as a yes." He leaned over and kissed my temple. The times he kissed me were so few and far between I couldn't help but smile.
"I'll meet you by the track," he said,
walking away without further explanation. Chapter 42. When I arrived at the baseball field minutes later, the visitor stands were already packed full of red-clad Hill Park fans, many of whom I recognized even from a distance. They formed one undulating mass of red, the head of a dragon rising up from their midst. Its scales glimmered in the sun and flames licked from its mouth. The Hill Park side was separated from the East Shill side by the concession stand and press box planted behind home plate. I kept my eyes peeled for any sign of Miles. What I saw instead were Cliff and Rhea, on their way to the bleachers from the concession stand. I froze like a deer in headlights when they neared. This was what I got for not doing a perimeter check. If I'd done the perimeter check, I wouldn't have run into them. I wouldn't look like an idiot. I wouldn't...
Watch out, babe. She's dangerous,
Cliff said to Rhea, holding out an arm like he was going to protect her from something. Protect her from you, idiot. I gritted my teeth and tried not to look at them. I'm not dangerous, I said, keeping my voice level.
Yeah, and your boyfriend isn't a Nazi,
Rhea scoffed. For a second, I wondered what Miles ever saw in her. She must have been horrible to him, because nothing else would make him hate her so much. Now I understood why the nicknames made Miles so upset, and I couldn't listen to it anymore. Don't call him that.
Really?
Rhea blinked, eyes wide and innocent.
Because he's kind of asking for it today.
Anger balled up in my chest. And you're kind of asking to be called a bitch. I hardly realized I was saying the words until they were out of my mouth. Rhea almost dropped her soda. Her voice turned flat and sharp and deadly.
What did you just call me?
I couldn't back down now.
You're a bitch. Sleeping with other guys just to make him jealous?
I jabbed a finger at Cliff. Is pretty far into the definition of bitch, I think. Rhea's knuckles turned white around the soda bottle. I really, really hoped she didn't charge at me. My legs weren't going to move very fast, even if I asked them.
Take that back, she said, voice tight. Fucking take it back, or I swear to God.
I didn't listen to the rest of her threat. I lowered my head and walked past them, toward the concession stand, to wherever Miles was. Coming to this game didn't seem like such an awesome idea anymore. I took deep gulps of air, thinking about the trouble I could get into for saying things like that to people like Rhea. I could already imagine them formulating a plan. Fuck. Oh, fuck. I needed to find Miles. I didn't have to look far. I spotted him walking toward the visitors' bleachers. My heart jumped into my throat and my stomach dropped, leaving a gaping void in my chest where vital things belonged. He was... a Nazi. Or he was dressed like one. The brown suit, the black boots and gloves, the hat, the glaring armband. A saber hung at his side, and the German flag from East Shoal's Flags of the World entryway rested against one shoulder. He pulled his hat off and wiped his forehead. He gelled his hair back, finally putting it in some kind of order. It wasn't until his eyes met mine that the realization this was really happening hit me. When he saw me, his gaze didn't turn glassy and hard and cold. It softened into something deeper than recognition. The eyes were his. The rest was not. I hurried over to him, stopped 10 feet away, and hugged my chest so he wouldn't see me shaking.
"You're going to get arrested,"
I hissed, barely daring to raise my voice above a whisper.
What are you doing?
They can't arrest me for wearing an outfit, Miles said, his eyebrows creasing. Besides, I'm the mascot, see?
He nudged the saber sheathed at his hip.
Hey, it's Schizo Ridgemont!
Some kids I knew from Hill Park walked by, looking shocked to see me alive. Miles whipped around, yelling at them in rapid German. The Hill Park kids shut up in surprise.
I realize that you think you have to keep doing this, but...
I yanked on my hair.
But you're dressed up like a Nazi.
What about everything you said to Cliff? About not wanting people to call you that? I hesitated.
How much? How much did they pay you to do this?
Miles didn't reply. Someone passing by laughed loudly, and I caught the words...
The Nazi and the Communist.
Shut up, I yelled. You're all so fucking inconsiderate. I'm trying to talk. I turned back to Miles, lowering my voice again.
You don't need to degrade yourself like this.
That was a terrible cover-up, and he knew it, and I could tell that he knew it. The truth was that I was terrified of Nazis, and here one stood.
Please, take the uniform off, I whispered. Please. He stared at me with a strange expression on his face.